Yeah, he's not interested in toning it down ever for any reason.
He pimped the crap out of that one.
It's all about having to watch four games at once and like, you know, barricade your door shut.
I mean, I guess it has to be a triple because they didn't give him an error, but really? Did he really earn third base there?
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 30, where we're practicing a home run trot on our hands. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I'm joined tonight by Josh Housam. Josh, what's up?
Man, just doing a little podcast, which hey, I guess is real obvious.
We should do one together. All right, let's talk about the Blue Jays. We are going to talk about Estrada's performance, Edwin's big numbers, the crazy atmosphere in Seattle, the fact that this team has trapped itself in a paper bag and cannot hit its way out. We have an interview with Team Jaffe, with Jay Jaffe. If you are not interested, Team Jaffe, if you are not interested in cheering for the Blue Jays anymore for some strange reason, we have a different team that you're going to want to cheer for. I promise. It is not a Major League Baseball team. We got a couple questions from you, and then it kind of all dissolves into chaos as we have a couple notable things around baseball this week. So, sir, I believe the record is 4-3 on the road trip. Am I?
No, you're right. It was actually a winning week.
Yeah, but not winning enough, really, to make up a lot of ground. So that leaves the Jays looking like the division is darn near impossible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the end of the time, by the time we finish recording this podcast, they're going to be five games out of first. It's not happening.
All of that build up to August where they tied it up, and now it's like, all right, let's get that home game for the wild card.
Yeah, and the thing is, they were building up catching Baltimore. It wasn't even the Red Sox.
And I guess that true talent level of the Red Sox is finally shaken out as they play Baltimore and make mincemeat out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, with Boston, they're just playing it. They can't do anything wrong right now. They've won, well, it's going to be seven in a row. It's 5-1 in the ninth. And they just don't look like they could be beaten, really, at the moment. I mean, obviously, that's not the case. You know, the Yankees had three-run leads in all four games in the series and got swept. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. That's even the Jays would have trouble doing that. Usually there's some kind of bullpen that shows up in one of the games to keep you in it, right?
You'd think so, right?
We have some allusions later on with Jay Jaffe about the problems with the Yankee bullpen, which is it no longer features the two most prized possessions that it had in it at the beginning of the year. And Joe Girardi, I think, still thinks it does.
Yeah, and I lied. It was three out of the four games, but still, they had three-run leads in three out of four games and got swept.
But back to the Blue Jays. I guess we'll start with the highlights. Marco Estrada is, well, he can be back. I don't know if I want to say he's back after one great start, but that was a great start.
Yeah, I mean, that was as good as he can be, right? I mean, that was, you know, he was pinpoint with his fastball, which helped his changeup play up, and then he's using his curveball. Well, he was just on, completely on. No hitter into the sixth, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just he was the first batter of the seventh who singled Cano, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing is.
No, was it Cano who got the hit?
I feel like it was Cano.
Oh, it might have been. That deep is just really, really nice to see.
It was interesting that he was perfect through, was it four full in Tampa? And then the wheels just completely fell off, and he gave up, whatever, five straight hits and got pulled. Well,
against Tampa at home, he struck out the first five batters of the game. And then after the three innings, it just fell off. It was very strange.
So I wonder, is Marco's injury something that he was aggravating as the game went on, pitching at max effort? That's just a guess. But maybe he really is feeling better, and now he can go further into the game without whatever it is, the back tightening up or starting to hurt him, and that's why he's always seemed to be pretty strong at the start of a game. and really faded fast, whereas he hung around really nicely in Seattle. The only downside is it's Seattle. How good are they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were, well, they're still only, I think, 3 games back of the Blue Jays, but I think it's more to it than what you just said, because it wasn't just, you know, the ability to keep it up, but he was also just throwing harder than he'd been throwing of late. And that's a big difference with Marco Estrada, right?
Yeah. Even those 2 or 3 miles an hour are still an important 2 or 3 miles an hour, right?
Yeah. So, but I mean, it certainly could be a factor just because he did definitely sustain things better.
And that's going to be important if the Jays get into this playoff series as opposed to this coin flip thing that they're headed towards right now, because you're going to need an effective Marco Estrada. Of the big three, Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, and Edwin Encarnacion, by far the most consistent over the past month has been Edwin Encarnacion, and he had himself a wonderful weekend in, well, a wonderful week in Seattle.
Wow. You seems just like I weekend. Think when you said the big three, I just assumed you were still talking about the pitching. It was one heck of a non segue there.
You criticize my segues. You criticize my non segues.
Look, I just like to criticize. You should know this by now.
I noticed.
Yeah, Edwin is having a quietly, I guess, incredible season.
Yep. It's quiet, and it still has 40. Did he hit his 43rd?
No, he's at 42 still.
42, which is ties his career high. It doesn't feel like he's got 11 games left to go, potentially.
And he's 12 RBI career of his career high. Clear of his career high.
But that's easier to do when you have Josh Donaldson batting in front of you all year and getting on base for most of that period of time, and Jose Bautista batting in front of you for a good chunk of the year. Not to say, though, that he hasn't...
Like he had last year all season?
I don't, but he didn't have as good a season. I just mean, as soon as your numbers improve, if you're Edwin, your spot in the batting order should put you well clear of 120 RBI.
Yeah, I don't know if I can really agree with that. I mean, he leads the league, so it's not like it's just like, oh, everybody does that when they're hitting there with good lineups. But, you know, his batting average, his on base, and his slugging are actually all down from last year.
Which is strange.
His strikeouts are way up. Actually, right now, he has 132 strikeouts, which is 30 more than his previous career high.
And I wonder, is it just because everybody's striking out? There definitely is, as we had, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that conversation about strikeouts. There is something to this whole thing that nobody's really figured out. Because it's like it just nobody cares about striking out anymore because they can be productive hitters while they strike out like madmen. And that's fine.
Although it is strange to see such a huge jump from one season to the next, while still everything else is still right on par. He's still a monster hitter. Like we said, 42 home runs and 123 RBI, 33 doubles. He's just he's walked 75 times. He's having another great year, and he's a free agent, and it's scary.
Josh Donaldson, not looking quite like JD. Well, since the 3-homer game is where everyone draws the line, but also since coming back from his hip problem, obviously he's not 100%, and that's going to be a problem for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I don't know what to with him. I mean, he came back off he didn't go on the DL, off his 3-game hiatus, and when he got on base, 8 of his first 9 plate appearances.
Looked great.
And, you know, he hit a home run in that game when everybody hit home runs, but... Yeah, he hasn't looked that great, and he was looked really shaky defensively. I mean, his errors cost the team the game tonight. So they're definitely going to need him to be healthy going forward.
So of the big three, we're left with Jose Bautista, who certainly has found the drama again.
Oh, yeah. I mean... He does have a bit of a flair for the dramatic, doesn't he?
he's what opposing fans tend to describe him as. kind of a showboater. If you had any doubts, his backwards moonwalk home run trot was enough to make you think that he's not interested in toning it down ever for any reason.
He pimped the crap out of that one. I mean, in fairness, it was a game tying home run in the ninth against one of the nastiest relievers in the game, but still so great.
If you haven't seen it, I remember his hop, skip, and a jump after off of Darren O'Day in Baltimore 2 years ago. That was quite expressive, but this was kind of a leisurely stroll / backwards walk halfway to I don't know. I'm not capturing it. Go watch the highlight. You can't miss it.
It's just brilliant.
Maybe he was inspired by the fans in the ballpark who made him think he was in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely nuts. I mean, the Jays fans always go down to Seattle. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen it like that. I was having a hard time finding Mariners fans.
Yeah. Yeah, like you would look at shots of the crowd, and it didn't matter where they took shots of the crowd. That was not Mariner teal. That was Blue Jay blue everywhere.
And they show the side videos of Russell Martin's home run, and it's like the entire crowd is rising. Wait, where was this game again?
I did like the guy with the signs up that he they found him on Twitter, but as well the Sportsnet broadcast found him. Stanley Cup since whatever date, USA 22, Canada 0. We rake and compost your national symbol. There's no point to bag milk.
Yeah, well, my favorite part though was all the Seattle writers. It's like, oh, what's wrong with this? They should do this. They should do that. They should ban tickets to Canadian fans. Yeah, and have 10,000 people there in a pennant race. Just everybody losing their minds over the fact that it was all Jays fans.
There was some sort of existential kind of angst coming out of Lookout Landing as well. I read that article about, like, does the city even care? And I'm like, guys, would you go back and look at film of the crowd for a Red Sox-Jays game at the Dome in 2009? And you find me who's cheering louder more often. So yeah, at that point, I'm sure the people in Toronto also said, "Oh, does anybody in this city care?" Well, the
difference is they weren't in a pennant race.
I think that if Seattle didn't have the big swoon that it had in the middle of this season, I think it would have been a different story with those tickets.
Maybe, but they also went on a big winning streak before this, and this was the biggest series of the season for them.
I hear you. I just think that the Toronto's had a lot more time to build that momentum, whereas I don't know if Seattle was expecting to have a competitive team.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, I guess. Not, I mean, I'm not one to agree with that just because of what we happened with the Jays last year. But I'm not here to rag on the Seattle people. It's here to congratulate the Western Canadians for doing this.
Those people deserve credit for making the trip because although it is a shorter than the trip to Toronto, it is certainly a journey to cross the border just to go see a baseball game. So that's pretty cool.
And I liked how it was clearly getting in the heads of the Seattle players too. You see Felix after he walked off the mound?
No.
So this is my house, screaming it.
Oh man, yeah. But yeah, for a few days, you have a lot of guests. what can you do?
Yeah.
So the Jays had that 1-8-run inning where nothing could go wrong. And if you subtract that one inning out of the Seattle series, they continue to do jack with the bats.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that gets somewhat masked when you look. It's like, oh, they were 4-3 on the trip, including taking 2 of 3 against a team that was right behind them in the standings. Yeah, they still can't hit. They're 12 for 58 on the road trip with runners in scoring position. with 13 strikeouts and four grounded double plays. They scored zero runs against Ricky Nolasco.
Mm-hmm. This should just be me, the sound of me banging my head on my desk.
Yeah, well, please feel free to do that for our listeners. Yeah, I mean, you know, they won the first two games. They scored five runs in each of them, but they scored seven runs in the first one, but they didn't score anything until late off the crappy Angels relievers, which is, we talked about this last podcast. When the Jays throw out their middle relievers, they suck and they can't keep the game close. The Jays couldn't score against the starters, but they hit the middle relievers.
Indeed. And when confronted with the all but two members of the Seattle bullpen, they had similar problems.
Yeah, I mean, in the first game, they won 3-2. Home run being, you know, the two-run homer for Martin. And then today, they lost 2-1. They had, was it the ninth or the 10th when they had runner on third, one out, didn't score. And then the next thing, they had first and second, nobody out, didn't score.
There they struck out and then hit into a double play. That was nice. It was tidy. It was Blue Jays 2016 in a nutshell. Are we still here? Yeah, get us out of here.
Yeah, it just hasn't been what people expected from this offense at any point. I mean, every time it seems like, okay, that game, great. They're going to break out, and then they score one run. It was Felix Hernandez, but he wasn't his best.
Well, Felix Hernandez isn't Felix Hernandez of yore, right? It's again, you said it. They didn't score against Ricky Nolasco. Certainly, they're not going to make Felix Hernandez look mortal. And I don't think I think again, all the Jays do is wait to see if they come out of it in time for the playoffs. You know, do you just hope that the Red Sox can't do no wrong streak ends before the end of the season, before we get into the postseason? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, we were talking about this before we recorded. I was like, well, at this point, I just hope the Red Sox just win out, obviously not when they play the Jays. But I don't want that, because if they win out until they face the Jays, they'll have a better record than Texas, and I don't want any part of the Red Sox in round one if the Jays get through the wild card.
Not that Texas is the team that you want to play, since they seem to have the blessed one-run win luck that the Orioles had 4 years ago, or whatever you call it.
Yeah, but then with the Orioles, that ran out once they got to the postseason. I'm not worried about that. I mean, the Texas Rangers have a very good team, but I don't think they're nearly as good as Boston.
I'm glad we can still talk about this as a realistic problem to have, is which team you want to face in the playoffs. I'm glad of that.
Hey, playoff tickets went on sale today. Hey. Clearly. and they're very optimistic. Last year, they went on sale for the first round all at once. And then once they looked like they were going to get through, okay, they released ALCS tickets. And then released World Series. Today, you can buy through the World Series if you want. We're going to make it, no problem.
I can only think that they've cleared up any of the technical problems they had with their refunding scheme from last year, and that now they know that they can they'll rake it in now, pack the place, and not have to worry about missing a refund later.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, presumptive.
I think this is the way that every other team does it. Last year's system was really kind of a joke. Like, why? What is the point of releasing them like that?
Mm. If you're expecting to sell out anyway, you certainly don't build any buzz by holding back or creating a perception of scarcity about the second round tickets, possibly.
And if you throw them up there all at once, you let more people get a chance to get tickets, because you can only get one game at a time. Mm. Right? It's like you have to pick and choose, like, hey, what do I want? But otherwise, you can make it to the same people, keep getting the tickets every game.
So since we're talking playoffs, I think now would probably be a good time to talk about just how much fun we can have getting to the playoffs and how many different teams are still in play. We're going to talk to Jay Jaffe about that and about a little concept that he came up with a few years ago called Team Entropy, and why you might want to cheer for them as well as your Blue Jays. tonight by Jay Jaffe of SI.com. How you doing tonight, Jay?
Hey, pretty good.
Welcome back to Artificial Turf Wars. We normally talk to you about the New York Yankees, but we're going to talk to you about something different tonight. The playoff picture is just about solidified, and you are the purveyor of the, how shall I put it, the champion of team entropy in a situation like this, where it's possible for a lot of things to happen with a couple of wild cards in play. And would you just want to go into what the team entropy idea, where that came from?
Yeah, I was a biology major in college, and I took four semesters of chemistry, and always mindful of my sciences. So entropy is a tendency of a system to head towards chaos, and I think when you're talking about the playoff races in the wild card era, I think as much chaos as possible is the preferable way to go. You know, yes, you can argue that. The problem with the wild card format is it shifts focus away from the first and second best teams in the division or the league to the fourth and fifth best teams. But when you wind up with all these impossible scenarios or seemingly impossible scenarios, these massive ties, tiebreakers and things like that, it gets to be pretty fun. So, you know, if your team is in it, you're rooting for your team. But if you don't really have a dog in the hunt, you're rooting for chaos, and which means you're on team entropy. That's what this is about. And, you know, over the last few weeks of every season, I try to lay out the scenarios with an eye towards the baseball prospectus playoff odds and the remaining schedules and the official tiebreaker formats, and just try to explain to people what's at stake as things get tight down the stretch.
So then things for team entry are sort of looking pretty good right now, right?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, I think the problem right now is the division races are all duds. I think we came into today with the closest race at like 4.5 games or 5 games, whatever the AL East was at the start of the day. That's just, you know, with 12 days to go in the season, that's nothing, you know, to write. There's nothing impressive here. So, but we do have both wild card races are wide open in the NL. We've got 3 teams that were in a dead tie today coming in. And in the AL, you've still got 6 teams that are alive, of which the Blue Jays, they came into the day with the lead, followed by the Orioles, the Tigers, the Astros, the Mariners, and the Yankees. And now with Seattle's win over Toronto, those top 5 teams, all but the Yankees, are separated by 3 games top to bottom. So this is looking like it could be pretty fun for the last 12 days here.
No, well, and then over in the NL too, you had the 3-way tie as of yesterday for the 1 wild card spot, right?
Well, yeah, for the 2 spots, yes. But you know, it's a game of musical chairs where somebody's going to be very, very sad. There, you got the Mets and the Cardinals and the Giants, and the Giants have a faint hope of coming back in the NL West. The other two teams are closed off. The Cubs, of course, have clinched already. The Nationals aren't far from clinching. The Dodgers have put the Giants in a situation where they don't control their own destiny anymore. So really, it's the wild card race for those 3, and somebody's going to wind up with heartbreak. So, you know, from the standpoint of chaos, it's certainly fun. You could wind up with a couple different scenarios there.
Now, I'm curious, because the playoffs obviously have to start pretty much right after the regular season, how much time does Major League Baseball really have to get an extra game or a tiebreaker in there before it starts to mess with the playoff schedule? Like, what does happen if
you got a couple days? You got a couple days there, really. I mean, basically, if I'm remembering correctly here, okay, the season ends on Sunday, October 2nd. There's no scheduled games for Monday. Tuesday is 1 wild card game. Wednesday is the other wild card game. What can happen is, if you've got a game 163 scenario for a tiebreaker, you play that on the Monday. And if you have to push the AL wild card so that both wild card games are on the same day, you can do that. After that, it starts to get a little bit dicey, although there is one more day of slack in the NL. There's no game scheduled for Thursday, October 6th. So they could push that back. The NL Division Series doesn't start till Friday. So they do actually have enough leeway. And I mean, there are only so many scenarios. These are, you know, we're talking about one game playoffs here. For the tiebreakers and whatever, even if you've got a four team tie, you know, that's only 2 days of games. It'll simplify itself pretty quickly.
Do you think that Major League Baseball would ever go to a, you know, most runs scored or record versus opponent or something instead of these potential matchups that will screw up the pitching for one team?
No, this isn't soccer. I know they use goal differential to break some ties in soccer. And look, I mean, I think run differential is great if you're talking about, you know, trying to determine strength of team and all those factors. But it's also, I mean, nobody wants to see a division race or a playoff decision decided on run differential. You want to see those two teams settle it on the field, even if there is an imbalance. I mean, baseball has always been about that. I mean, look, they've done everything they can to make it so the 12th best team or the 10th best team, you know, has a fighting chance to win the World Series. I mean, that's what this is has all been about over the last 20 years or so, this expanded playoff format. So I don't see a situation where they would deprive the so-called David of his chance to knock off the Goliath merely on the basis of run differential.
Well, I think that Greg and I and all the people listening are happy that would never happen. Now, when we get down to one of these playoff games, I'm just curious which side of the fence you fall on this. Would you be someone who would prefer shorter rosters for games like that so teams can't, you know, drop the next 4 days starter and have a 10-man bullpen with two pinch running specialists? Or do you like the extra roster machinations that can play out?
For the actual wild card game? Yeah, I can't say I like the way that works. I think you should have to set your roster for the wild card game and the division series at one time. Maybe you get an injury freebie there thrown in, but you know, I'm not a big fan of the expanded rosters. You know, while I don't have a problem with bringing up the kids, I think that you should be playing the games under, you know, 25 man rules where you can designate 25 active guys. Maybe you're allowed to deactivate last night's starter or something like that, to give yourself the extra reliever that you're going to take anyway. But you know, on the whole, I think that, we've gone far too much to the side of infinite bullpens, and it's a drag to watch. It's not only depressing scoring a little bit, but I mean that just the endless pitching changes, chasing the matchups, and you know, there's some managers that abuse it, and somebody who spends a lot of time watching the Dodgers games from the East Coast, Dave Roberts is one of the big offenders here in his first year. I mean, just the parade of guys. You know, three and four guys in an inning to get through these things. So it's a nightmare. And no 10-man bullpens, please.
I can tell you're a Yankee fan because you let Joe Girardi off the hook and you singled out someone else.
I watch a lot of Yankees. I think I'm kind of far removed from the day when I would call myself a fan. You know, being in the press box when you go there, not that I have done it much this year because of finishing a book and having a baby in our family here. But Girardi, I think, has made a hash of the Yankees' last stand. As unlikely as it was with his bullpen management, was pretty brutal in that Red Sox series. I mean, once you've traded Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, you don't really have nearly the same bullpen. You just can't depend on guys like Tommy Lane and James Pazos to give you the same effect in the middle innings as the guys you had bumped from the eighth and ninth to give you those innings. So Girardi's usually had a very deft touch with relievers, but he just doesn't have that right now.
So if I want to follow the progress of Team Entropy and possibibly try and pray that the Blue Jays stay as far away from it as possible, contributing to it, where would I follow your updates?
The articles are on SI.com. I had one last Wednesday. I had one today. I think we'll probably do the next one will probably be Monday or Sunday. And then updates as needed as the week goes on. So SI.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at @JJY_Jaffe, JAFFE. I'm not hard to find. Google me. I will answer questions about it when I can as well. So climb on board the Team Entropy bandwagon and let's have some fun rooting for chaos.
Because chaos means more baseball, not less. That's the exactly. underlying
it's all
thing.
About yep. more baseball. It's all about more baseball. It's all about having to watch four games at once and like, you know, barricade your door shut so you know, so nobody disturbs you, because there are a lot more important things going on that screen than there are in real life.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us, Jay, and educating us a little about the value of chaos right here at the end of the season.
Sure thing, guys. Thanks for having me on, and good luck in surviving this next week and a half.
Thank you very
thanks.
Much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Everything you needed to know about the universe's tendency to descend into chaos. Also playoff baseball.
Yeah. let's just no. Blue Jays just win clear. And then there can be chaos for the last spot. I don't care about that.
Yeah. Somebody else can play the tiebreaker before the what is effectively a tiebreaker.
Yeah. Baltimore, Houston, Seattle, New York, they can all tie for the second wild card.
Get on up. Oh, my goodness. We do have a couple questions this week, though people seem perhaps de-energized slightly by the final extra inning loss in Seattle there.
I do find that we get far fewer questions after games like that when it's an afternoon game.
Yeah. Yeah. The combination of afternoon game and walk-off loss tends to make people skitter away from Twitter, I think, is what the problem. Okay, so we'll talk about that game in the first question, I guess. Dave Church asked us, for a brief shining moment, how great was that Bautista home run? And then Brian A, big underscore B underscore SR, our good friend, said, which player will be the first one to punch Bautista in the face for the backward strut after the game-tying home run versus Seattle? So we have great, but with penalty.
So, for the first part of the question, for the brief shining moment, it was awesome. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't as awesome as, say, last year's because, well, one, it didn't give them the lead. But also, it's just, you know, the way the team is hitting, it's like, okay, they got one. You know, let's see if they can somehow get another one. I mean, that thought is exciting and cool as it was. That thought is still there. It's like, okay, fine. Let's see if they can somehow score a second run. They scored 1-9.
I would argue it was exactly as great as the Tulo Grand Slam the other week. It was a perfectly executed what the team needed in that moment, and then the team couldn't do anything with it afterwards.
Yeah, there's the Tulo Grand Slam put them ahead.
Yeah, and they couldn't hold that lead for any number of outs, practically. But same idea to me. It is, but the Tulo Grand Slam was what, in the fourth or fifth inning? So my thought was, can they hold on for another 5 innings with this bullpen? And the answer was no. which player will be the first one to punch Bautista in the face is the second part of the question.
It'll be Rudy Nodor in the ALDS.
Just because.
He won't care that it didn't happen against Seattle. He'll still do it.
Hey, Joey. Joey Bats. What was that for? A home run against another team. Oh, goodness. What else do we have? We had that
so we
question.
Got asked a question. Yeah this came from Joel Wendell. This is obviously spurred on by that incredible inning against the Mariners. Jay's got all 9 batters on in a row. Is this rare? 8 hits, 1 walk, 16 total bases, 8 runs. Is that close to best ever? Sadly, Joel, we tried. We really did. And we could not find the answer to how rare that is or how, you know, where it stands in Jay's history. Apparently the best ever is 17 in a row. I couldn't find any specific sourcing on that. So not close, but
and
it was still incredible.
I'm kind of mad because I would like to know and I can't, I don't.
And
yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to write to Elias Sports Bureau or something like that. There was one notable thing just on that vein. So they got 7 hits and 7 straight plate appearances in that inning. And that was the first time that had happened since 2009 for the Blue Jays.
So it is indeed a rare thing. Mm-hmm. 7 years. So hard to do. Lots of things the Jays do are hard to do. Some of them are good. Some of them not so good. We'll get to those later. So because we have more questions. Well, one question. What the F from Midawesome, Danny Madaw? That's just the whole question. What the F?
I mean, this came... we asked for questions right after the loss. Where things went a little squirrely, shall we say. So this is just a nice 3 weeks in a row summation of how Jays fans feel about the way they're giving away games at times.
He did clarify after you asked him, why can't they score or play defense anymore? I don't think that's really something I have the power to answer. I wish I did, though. At least it would make more sense.
The defense has been really, really bad, though. I mean, wow.
Devin Travis. I love that kid. I do. But he somehow tried to corral a ball and ended up kicking it into the right field court. What?
For a triple.
But now, triple. If how big are your quotation marks around the world word triple when you say that?
So I was actually watching that with Nick Dyka and Mike Sun at a bar, and we're just like, so I mean, I guess it has to be a triple because they didn't give him an error, but really? Did he really earn third base there?
That is a single. You could argue it was an infield single with a two base error with any scorer who isn't halfway into the sauce or at home. This is not a triple. Nobody triples off
you can't an give
infielder.
Him a two. You can't give him a two base error on it because then it's just he should have made the play.
I'll give him a three base error. There's just no. He was deep enough. I would say he's deep enough in the outfield that it would require extraordinary effort for him to pop up and get him at first. Voila, would have been a single. But kicking it into the corner. Okay, I'm over kicking it into the corner.
You know, and it'd be one thing if it was just Travis, right? It's like, well, he's hitting unbelievably well. His hitting streak ended today, I believe. But it's not just him. I mean, other hitters, other players who are historically good defenders have been shaky lately. Donaldson has not been himself. We discussed that. He's hurt. So, okay, at least there's a reason there. Pilar has been really not very good of late. He's misplayed a lot of balls, and he made an error today just by dropping a ball as he was trying to pick it up to throw it. But he's making a lot of strange routes on balls in center. He's catching some, but he's not catching all of them.
And this team is 4-3 over the past week.
Yeah.
we rag on them constantly, and they had a winning week. Oh, my goodness.
But they could have been more, right?
Yes, absolutely. So... Speaking of more, I guess now I would mention Mr. Happ, who we completely glossed over there. He won his 20th game.
He did. 20-4.
So 20 wins. Again, we're not big on wins here, but 20 wins is still special. Whether it's statistically significant or not, I don't know, but it's very special. He joins a wonderful list of Blue Jays players who have won 20 games. So yeah, congratulations, Mr. Happ. We probably shouldn't have glossed over that at the first because you are one of the reasons this team is where it is. Yeah, a little.
I mean, the three starters for the Jays in this game, they're the when earlier today when I thought you were going to talk about the big three, they were all great.
Yeah,
Estrada, he didn't give up a run. Sanchez gave up one run through six, and Happ gave up two runs that were both. Travis booted two balls in the innings that neither was ruled an error. And those are the two runs that scored. I mean, he was all three pitchers were excellent and happened all year.
Yeah.
With the exception of a little brief spell for Estrada, but we touched on that.
A brief spell. I like that. He downplayed that beautifully. Okay. So I was going to go to our play of the week. And then I realized we don't actually do a feature that's a play of the week. So that's disingenuous of me.
This was worth it.
Oh, totally.
It's the play of the week.
So the play of the week is Rick Porcello hit Manny Machado. Now, that's not actually the important part of the play. The important part was Manny Machado got deeply offended and did the stare down and yak at Porcello as he walks down to first base, to which Rick was a little miffed. He was so miffed, he actually turned towards the camera, fortunately, and towards Machado, and said, I quote, you can read his lips, I'm not trying to hit you, bro. Why would I want to hit you with that MF, and he's pointing at Trumbo, coming up? So, totally putting him in his place. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and you missed the next line. So just get the bleeps out, because it loses its effect with your censoring yourself. He's like, why would I want to hit you with that up? Use your head.
Oh, I engaged the bleep machine. Yeah, so, yeah, dear Manny Machado, you're not that good. That's Rick Porcello telling you, if you didn't notice. It's just, yeah, reality check, dude.
Oh, it was just funny. It's like, okay, yeah, you're right. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, no tip of the cap, no anything. Just awfully candid. You don't get that kind of candid right on the field. Usually there's, you know, all that back and forth. It's like, dude, come on. What are you thinking? Oh, my goodness. I think we have covered an entire week, more or less, in Blue Jays baseball. Have we?
Yeah. Just one thing I wanted to mention. In that game, the big inning, Saunders and Martin were became the first Canadian duo ever with 20 home runs.
Little light applause there.
Yes, after earlier in the season becoming the first Canadian duo to hit home runs in the same inning.
A little clap, 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 clap. Yeah, I mean, even though Saunders has been in the second half, it has worked out pretty well for the Blue Jays. Maybe they won't have to offer him a qualifying offer. Works out for everybody. Yay! That was a nice thought. Was that your official final thought, or do I get to ask you for a final thought still?
I have one, but you can go first this time.
So the Blue Jays, in the weird and wild season that they have had 17 solo home runs in a row earlier in the season, which is absurdly weird, to be perfectly honest. How do you hit 17 home runs in a row without anybody on base? But they decided that seemed like such fun that just in this series, they got up to 17 consecutive doubles with nobody on base. So you don't call them solo doubles, but they broke that streak in the inning where literally everybody got on base and Edwin Encarnacion hit a double. It was the 18th in the series, finally had someone to drive in. So if you wonder why this team
is having series, they did not have 17 doubles in the series. No.
In the sequence of 17 doubles. The
18th. Yeah, just make that clear. Like, yeah. It's like not like in the four-game set they hit 17 doubles.
But the 18th was in the midst of an inning where they literally could not stop getting on base. And that's the only way they managed to hit a double with a man on. Very weird. But it explains a lot about how this team's weird season has gone. Credit to the road guy for keeping track, as well as James and T.O.
Yeah, it's just been like that.
It doesn't even make sense.
Well, yeah, it's like early in the season, right? They had the 17 consecutive solo homers. I mean,
doesn't make sense either.
No. Both team records. Yeah.
Your final thought.
My final thought. Brett Cecil should just not warm up in the eighth inning. See, Gibby calls down, get Cecil up. He should just stay on the seat.
Is it like a protest?
Well, no. It's just every time. This happened 3 or 4 times on this road in this 7-game road trip. The eighth inning, Grilly would be pitching, and there'd be some lefties coming up. So it'd be like, Cecil, get up. And then Osuna would get up next to him. The lefties would come up, and then he'd go to Osuna.
Subtle. It's like,
yeah, it's like Cecil's only warming up if they blow a 3-run lead or something like that. It's like, why bother? Just stay seated.
Yeah, I think Gibbons has just not come to terms with how he wants to use Brett Cecil anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is they talked before the Seattle series about, you know, they're going to increase Cecil's workload and, you know, decrease Biagini's a bit. And then they did the same thing in the first game of the series.
There's a lot of same thing about the Blue Jays. A lot of same thing and a lot of not quite.
And sorry, I have one more thing. We do have a do-over.
Oh, we do.
You.
Me?
you said you were going to give yourself a do-over for some errors on our podcast last week.
Oh, yes. I regret. Now, did the new version go up?
It was not working properly. It wouldn't go up.
Okay. I regret accidentally muting Josh laughing at himself. So as a result, he was laughing at silence.
Yeah, you and the two of us are just sitting here for like a minute and a half reacting to nothing.
I assure you that wasn't intentional. I apologize. It won't happen again. Well, it won't happen again this podcast, but, you know, maybe a few down the line. We'll see if those things that I said were bleeped out are actually bleeped out.
There you go.
All right. So I would have to say that you have been Joshua Hausen at Joshua Hausen, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead2010. And our guest was Jay Jaffe of SI.com at J_Jaffe. And this has been Artificial Turf Wars number 30. And we will see you next week.